Nothing but a dirty, dirty old man. You do your thinking with a one-track mind. Keep talking about heaven, glory, but on your face is a different story. Clean up your rap, your story's getting dusty. Wash out your mouth, your lies are getting rusty. Can't believe nothing you say, 'cause I'm around and I see what you do.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Joan Walsh, editor-at-large of Salon.com and an MSNBC political analyst. She is a regular on Hardball with Chris Matthews, The Edge Show, Politics Nation, and a range of other MSNBC shows. Her latest book, just out in paperback, is What's the Matter with White People? Finding Our Way in the Next America. Welcome to Background Briefing, Joan Walsh.
Thank you, Ian.
And in the opening, I mentioned that we'd be talking about or discussing the domination of our politics by a minority of angry white men who have prevented sensible gun safety measures that 90% of Americans favor. Do you have an answer to this puzzlement?
Oh, if I did, Ian, we'd all be very lucky. I think one answer, though, really lies in the gerrymandering of the House, where you have Republicans who are going to be in Congress for life if they'd like to, unless they get a Tea Party challenge, and that's partially true in the Senate as well, that everyone is looking to their right flank. And it's also true for Democrats, that, Democrats in red states, Heidi Heitkamp, Mark Pryor, et cetera, the people who voted against, the milquetoast, watered-down background checks, they are also looking to their right. They're not afraid of a left-wing pro-gun challenger when they come up for election next. They're afraid of either a right-wing Democrat or, their Republican challenger.
But Joan, still the bill did pass by 54 votes, which is a majority in the Senate. But we know because it got nowhere because of the filibuster threshold. And that leads me to ask whether or not, since the Republican Party is essentially a Southern party and most of their senators are Southerners, is this a legacy then of Jim Crow, the ability of a minority to thwart a majority, the very mechanics of Jim Crow?
Well, I think it's slightly different mechanics, but it is a minority. They've always been very good at wielding the power of our supposed democracy to thwart the majority, whether it's the African American majority in the South or large plurality in the South, or now nationally. I mean, you're right. And the fact that Harry Reid didn't get filibuster reform done when he maybe could have, and the fact that the president probably didn't fight for it the way he should have, and Democrats didn't take that on as a cause. Supposedly they're always thinking about, well, what will happen to us when we're in a minority? Maybe we're going to want this back again. And I think that's ridiculous thinking. Think about the policies you need to keep the majority, rather than how you're going to thwart the other guy's agenda when you're in the minority. But both parties do it to some extent.
Well, presumably the Democrats are thinking of 2014, the midterms, where normally the party in the White House loses seats. Is that what's going on here?
I think that is what's going on here. And you saw the red state Democrats who did do the right thing, like John Tester of Montana. Many of them had just come through a tough reelection battle. So, it tended to be people who were looking at 2014, but also then, you've got Heidi Heitkamp who was just elected for the first time and had 6 years to live down in some way or out-organize the NRA if she'd cast a good vote for background checks. So it doesn't always line up with 2014, but yes, the fear of 2014 now drives everything.
Again, I'm speaking with Joan Walsh, editor-at-large of Salon.com and an MSNBC political analyst. She's a regular on Hardball with Chris Matthews, The Ed Show, Politics Nation, and a range of other MSNBC shows. Her latest book just out in paperback is What's the Matter with White People? Finding Our Way in the Next America. So given this, what the stakes are in 2014, and I think they go beyond just a regular Democrat versus Republican situation here, because this is really about ending gridlock, at least if that's the case the Democrats could make, because we do have a broken and paralyzed government. And the only way it will change is if we if the Democrats get enough people to get over the 60th threshold, assuming that they don't man up and do something about the filibuster usurpation. So if they can get more than 60 seats in the Senate and get a majority back in the House, maybe then they can get something done. Otherwise, it's completely bleak, isn't it?
It's fairly bleak, but I think it's very unlikely that they're going to be able to do that. They have a lot of senators up for re-election. The House is not necessarily within their grip. So I think we're going to be living the way we are, roughly the way we are, for a while. But it would help if we had more Democrats who voted like populist Democrats and less like Republicans and were less enthralled either to Wall Street or the NRA. However, having said that, the Democrats can't do it alone. And the fact that you really are losing that, we've lost that old Northeastern moderate Republican. We've got Kelly Ayotte, who again cast a terrible vote on background checks and is hearing from her constituents. We've got, I guess, to some extent, Chris Christie, but we're losing moderate Republicans of all stripes and from all regions, and so that there's not any place that you can consider this. The center has moved so far to the right, and I think it's pulled the Democratic Party to some extent that way too.
Well, when you casting some pouring some cold water on the Democrats' chances to fix our broken government in 2014, which of course it goes against the conventions. Although Bill Clinton did actually pick up seats in his second term
in 1998. Yes, he did, and I think that was. That was a reaction both to the overreach of impeachment and the humiliation of Newt Gingrich. And so it is possible. It's possible for them to pick up seats. I don't mean to say that they can't. It's not likely that they'll pick. They're not going to pick up a veto-proof majority, I don't think, unless the Republicans really do something deeply, even more deeply stupid than they've been doing.
Well, I brought this up because there was a hearing this week with Kathleen Sebelius, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, where it became extremely evident that Democratic senators and also House members are very, very concerned about the rollout of so-called Obamacare. They're going to start the exchanges in October, and then by January the 1st of 2014, they're supposed to roll them out, and they're supposed to be up and running, and it looks as if, and a lot of these senators, like Senator Cardin of Maryland, saying, first of all, Max Baucus is not exactly the best source, I don't think, but he gives them a failing grade and says this is just going to be a huge train wreck that's coming. This is a terrible possibility. I mean, the LA Times broke a story recently that said that in the law there's a tiny little trap that allows the big insurance companies to extend their existing policies for a whole year through 2014. So if this is true, which apparently it is, and I don't know how in God's name that ever got into the bill, this loophole, the big insurance companies could then cherry pick and keep their healthy customers and then dump the ones they don't want on this new exchange. And as Cardin is saying, is that he's got indications already that the insurance companies are going to raise their rates. So if Obamacare is rolled out in 2014 and the American consumer / voter sees their insurance premiums go up, isn't that going to play right into the Republicans' hands?
I'm very concerned about that, too. you know, I think it's great that Max Baucus has emerged as a critic, since he probably single-handedly had more to do than any other Democrat with the way the bill turned out, and, you know, with killing all of the progressive alternatives, whether it was public option or Medicare for all. He was, you know, the bottleneck, and was constantly compromising with Republicans, only to, in the end, get no Republican support for the bill. So, you know, you really do have these Democrats who've been beholden to the insurance companies, you know, right up until the very end, slipping in exceptions. And, you know, in states like New York, where there is a stronger, I mean, California in general has a strong regulatory culture and a pro-consumer culture compared to most other states, but this is an area where California doesn't have the power to really reject rate increases, whereas in New York they have much more power. And, you know, so state by state you're going to see all kinds of shenanigans by the insurance companies. And yes, it's going to be, when people are paying higher premiums, there's a real danger that they're going to be blaming Obamacare and the Democrats rather than crediting them with the decent things that the bill did.
And Joan Walsh, again, the author of What's the Matter with White People, Finding Our Way into the Next America. Just to back on the subject of angry white men, I saw the most extraordinary example of that the other day on television. There was this youngish-looking congressman from Arkansas, the crew cut, a Republican, a Tea Party guy, railing about how Obama didn't keep us safe with the Boston bomber, and how Bush kept us safe. And this has been echoed. It's almost the Republican talking points. They echo all around Fox News amongst the punditry. Krauthammer is saying the same thing. Dana Perina is saying the same thing. So they're all, singing off the same hymnal there. But, you know, of course, they conveniently omit 9/11. I was just talking to Colonel Wilkerson about it, and he feels that Bush and Cheney actually have tremendous culpability, and they know it for reckless endangerment of the United States prior to 9/11. He also said something I'd never heard before, which is that both Bush and Cheney literally went missing for 40 minutes at that critical moment, and that Cheney had nothing to do with the shoot down of the plane. In fact, people were looking for him to find out what to do about this plane that was coming in from Pennsylvania.
I hadn't heard that either. That's very interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, and when you think about the way the whole country pulled together after 9/11, and Democrats really, you know, applauded the president and his approval ratings soared. I mean, I don't really like comparing Boston with 9/11 because it's really not in the same scope or scale in any way. You know, there's almost no comparison, except that the two bombers may have been at least partly driven by, you know, Islamic radicalism, but in so many other ways, you know, it was much, this is no consolation to either, you know, the families who lost loved ones or the survivors who will be rebuilding their lives for a long time, but the scale was just, there's no comparison. And so the fact that we talk about them in the same breath is kind of crazy to me. But since we do, you know, the country pulled together, and Democrats supported George Bush after 9/11. And the immediate crazy finger pointing that we're seeing, that we've seen since, you know, day two or three, is just it's a measure of this hyper partisanship and this, Obama hatred that, you know, has made his life and his political possibilities really miserable. And I also, I've been having a lot of fun with the debate over are the Tsarnaev brothers white? Well, of course they're white. They are from the Caucasus and they are Caucasian. But even more, in a Boston Globe story last week about the poor, Chinese immigrant who they carjacked, Tamerlan made a joke about maybe the Chinese guy thought all whites look alike. So, you know, we want to cast them as other. We want to cast them as Muslim fundamentalist extremist radicals. We want to make them as scary and other as possible. When, you know, the more we find out about this story, they're really a hybrid, with Islamic radicalism playing some role and just kind of lumpen American alienation playing, you know, as large, if not a larger role.
So just in closing, though, John Walsh, then, is it possible, back to 2014, is it possible that the better angels of our nature will emerge in 2014 and a majority of Americans will recognize that people like this congressman spouting off about Bush keeping us safe and Obama not, and Ted Cruz, who the president last night at the Correspondents' Dinner made fun of, and the stuff that he says is just obscene and horrible and completely lunatic, and Rand Paul's had his share of saying crazy stuff, and you know, there's a derangement out there that you referred to. Is it possible that all this will be recognized, and that this guy that's trying to do a job can't get anything done because of these forces arrayed against him may get some sympathy?
It's possible. I mean, it's very possible. It's also possible that, you know, I'm an optimist, so I think it's possible. But I think that the forces of fear that, you know, the Republicans really have since the 60s been masters of using, or really since the 40s, since the debate over who lost China and Truman supposedly lost China and then Vietnam, you know, they've been really great at using the politics of fear to make voters think that Democrats mean to do them harm in some way. And so, you know, we're seeing a real resurgence of that. It's morphing slightly, but it's still there. And that, you know, I think that's going to be part of what plays out in 2014.
And do you think that the president can make a case? I don't think he is going to, but he should make a case that the reason the economy's not doing well is that they've stopped him at every turn, even going back to his original stimulus. So the question you have to ask is, did the Republicans thwart economic recovery out of ideology or to screw Obama?
I think it was very much both. And I think he did make that case fairly successfully in the 2012 elections. But, you know, there's probably diminishing returns on that particular argument to go, you know, when you have to go back to 2009. I think that Obama and the Democrats are, you know, are going to be suffering from or benefiting from, you know, the question, what have you done for me lately? And they've got to make a case that they're continuing to do things against all odds, against Republican opposition in order to have a successful 2014.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Joan Walsh.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Joan Walsh, who's editor-at-large of Salon.com and an MSNBC political analyst. She's a regular on Hardball with Chris Matthews, The Ed Show, Politics Nation, and a range of other MSNBC shows. Her latest book, just out in paperback, is What's the Matter with White People Finding Our Way in the Next America? This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.